Hi, this is Eric Greb, Managing Editor of Neurology Reviews. A systematic review of the literature presented at the 2014 International Stroke Conference indicated that neurologists do not have a generally accepted definition of rapidly improving stroke symptoms, or RISS. As a consequence, the proper treatment and eventual outcomes for patients with RISS are uncertain. Clotilde Balukhani, vascular neurologist and research instructor at the Department of Neurology at the State University of New York Downstate Medical Center in Brooklyn, joins me to discuss the implications of the literature review. Dr. Balukhani, why do we lack a consensus definition of RISS?
As a historical note, exclusion criteria for the NINDS-RTPA stroke trials originally excluded patients with either very specific minor stroke syndromes or with the major symptoms that are rapidly improving by the time of randomization. And this was clearly stated in the NINDS trials manual of procedures. Mm-hmm. And the intent of this exclusion criteria was clearly to avoid unnecessary treatment of TIAs. And unfortunately, the word major was left out of the New England Journal of Medicine paper in 1995 due to strict word count. And not only the word major, but also the original intent has clearly been lost in translation in our clinical practice. And subsequent to the NINDS trials, no formal consensus has been achieved to define either minor stroke nor RIS, and neither any clinical guidelines have precisely clarified these issues. As a consequence, not only we do lack a definition for RIS, I would say, but also RIS and minor strokes have been generally lumped together, which makes even more difficult the work to split out these two concepts. And even though they may potentially overlap, the degree of similarity, of course, depends on the magnitude of improvement in RIS and may carry distinctive clinical implications for someone with a stable mild deficit. Further, there is another critical aspect to consider for RIS, because improvement in symptoms may occur before or after arrival to the emergency department, while the NIH stroke scale, which is the stroke severity scale generally used, could have been recorded prior or following to improvement. And to identify and quantify the improvement requires at least two different time points evaluation. And unless we introduce in our clinical practice two time point evaluation, we will be unable to estimate the frequency and the magnitude of RIS and discriminate, more importantly, RIS for minor strokes. So, of course, prospective studies including a serial evaluation of stroke severity, maybe using the NIH stroke scale in the early phase of stroke before a treatment decision is made, may help clarify the distinction between minor stroke and RIS and further identify the relationship between time and the rate of improvement in subjects that present with improvement.
After physician judgment, the second most common definition of RISS or RIS that you found in the literature is a reduction of 4 or more points in NIH stroke scale score from initial presentation to TPA decision time. Do you think this is a reasonable definition?
In my opinion, this is a reasonable definition when compared to the physician judgment definition. At least this definition, by using a raw score, provides an estimate of the neurological improvement. However, saying that a subject improves 4 points or more on the NIH doesn't really tell anything about the starting and finish points. In other words, I think it doesn't give you any information about the level of disability that the improving patient reaches at the end of the improvement. I think that a crude raw score doesn't necessarily inform you about the degree of disability at the individual level. And saying that a subject has improved doesn't mean that the subject has improved to a non-disabling state. And further, I think there is another key point to discuss. Is NIH, the usual stroke severity score, really sufficient to describe stroke deficit and discriminate between minor and non-minor and disabling versus non-disabling? Because the NIH stroke scale was designed as a tool to quantify neurological deficits commonly seen in acute stroke. However, it has been reported in the literature that not all stroke signs are captured on the NIH, and this is a frequent clinical observation. And the NIH doesn't not directly test the gait, for example, or balance, or vestibular function, or cognition, and hand strength, for example. So It is a frequent observation that patients with low NIH score are functionally worse than expected. And furthermore, an NIH score of 3 could represent the deficit of a person with a moderately severe language impairment, which is certainly a disabling stroke, but it could also represent a mild facial weakness or asymmetry with a mild dysarthria and a mild drift of an upper extremity, which is clearly non-disabling stroke. So perhaps in the future, a further refinement of the NIH may help decision-making about treatment in acute ischemic stroke patients presenting with risk and or minor strokes.
An NINDS task force defined risk as a combination of NIHSS score and the assessment of potential disability by the patient and the physician. How is potential disability assessed, and what is the advantage of including the patient's assessment in the definition of risk?
So in the envision of the task force, potential disability would be assessed collectively by the physicians, patient, and family, of course, if present and available. And the patient would be asked if they would be able to do all their daily activities and work, if they were working, of course, and if they stayed exactly the same from the point of the questioning. If there are things the patient could not do for themselves, the physician or the family, then that would be considered disabling, even to a mild, modest degree. And there would be some limitation in their activities of daily living. And of course, the advantage of including the patient's assessment is because the patient knows themselves and how their current symptoms may impact their life. And of course, this is not covered by the NIH stroke scale. And this will also cover, you know, potential cognitive or deficit or depression deficit. They, of course, they're not captured by the NIH as well.
And also, the administration of TPA is not recommended for patients with risk, according to the drug's own label. The literature, however, describes patients with risk who had positive outcomes after receiving TPA. So what subset of patients with risk might benefit from TPA?
So as our literature review has pointed out, there is evidence that larger vessel occlusion or stenosis in acute ischemic stroke patients with the minor stroke or rapidly improving stroke symptoms has been associated with an increased odds of poor outcome. Of course, early vascular evaluation may identify the patient with minor stroke or risk at greater risk for worsening and with a greater need for urgent recanalization. However, the role of imaging and vascular imaging remains to be determined because these are only observations. And at our institution, specifically, we have developed an original study protocol to assess acute stroke patients presenting within 4.5 hours, so eligible for intravenous thrombolysis, by using a serial neurological evaluation with NIH combined with non-invasive ultrasound assessment of an intracranial and extracranial vasculature, which is performed at ED. And this study, which is called RUN, and has been supported by the American Heart Association, and we hope to obtain the prospective data that could help clarify the role of imaging, vascular imaging, in identifying subgroups of risk patients and also minor stroke that may benefit from more aggressive treatment strategies.
Researchers are planning a randomized controlled clinical trial to clarify the risk-benefit ratio of TPA in patients with mild stroke or risk. What can you tell us about this trial's methodology and endpoints?
So this will be a randomized, double-blind, placebo-controlled phase 3B clinical trial of ITPA, intravenous TPA, versus placebo. And the patient population will consist of patients treated within 3 hours of symptom onset with an NIH score ranging from 0 to 5 and considered non-disabling. So the primary endpoint will be the modified ranking scale at 3 months post-stroke. And additional endpoints will include the cognitive and quality of life and cost effectiveness analysis will be also measured. So the trial is called PRISMS and is funded by Genentech. And the PI is Dr. Pooja Khatri at the University of Cincinnati. And Sunidhan State will be one of the study centers.
Thank you very much for your time, Dr. Balukhani.
Thank you for the opportunity to talk about our research.
This is Eric Greb, Managing Editor of Neurology Reviews. Thank you for listening.